What I want to know is, out of all the stories you told me, which ones were true and which ones weren't?
My dear doctor, they're all true.
Even the zombie takeout?
Especially the zombie takeout. And welcome to episode 415 of Zombie Takeout, the B-movie and cult movie show. I'm John.
And I'm Scotto.
And I just got to play Garrick. That was so much fun.
Oh man, that actor, I always remembered him like it was a Twilight Zone episode where he played JFK, and the deal was like somebody stopped the Kennedy assassination, and that was like the whole thing was this guy traveling back in time to stop it. But the big twist in the end is, of course, everything got fucked up. Like a nuclear war was starting and like everything was going crazy.
I need to look for him in other things because I only know him as Garrick, and I
Yeah.
adore Garrick. Anyway, before we get to this week's movie, I've recently been watching movies on the weekends, which, when you watch them every week for the show, tends not to be a thing, you know?
Yeah.
So a couple weekends ago, I saw Mortal Engines, which I do recommend if you can turn your brain off. It's very predictable, but it's a lot of fun. It involves like the major cities of the world being put on wheels and like going to war with each other.
Oh, wow.
Very fun. Again, very predictable. Turn your brain off. Last weekend, I watched Jurassic World, and I need to explain this because it's a
All
Jurassic
right.
movie.
Here's my question up front.
Why?
Why?
Well, I realized while watching the Mandalorian behind the scenes series, and if you like the Mandalorian, I highly recommend the behind the scenes series.
Of course.
I realized while watching that, or I while watching that, I developed a bit of a thing for Bryce Dallas Howard, and I found out that she's the female lead in the Jurassic World movies, so I decided to watch the first one.
Oh, now I hear. Now it makes sense.
And for the most part, it is what you think it is. It's kind of like a sci-fi movie with a much larger budget and a little bit less intentional ridiculousness. And it's not that bad if you take it on those terms. Basic plot line, she plays one of the executives at the park. He plays Dinosaur Dundee. Her nephews come to visit. She pawns them off on her assistant. They slip away from the assistant, end up in lost in the middle of the park when a giant, very dangerous hybrid dinosaur gets loose. They have to go in and rescue him. That's the first half, and then the second half, they're trying to kill the dinosaur. But in the midst of the first half, she has to rescue him from a pterodactyl that's attacking him by grabbing his gun and shooting it. We're not going to bother getting into how she managed to shoot the pterodactyl and not him when she's never fired a gun before. But afterwards, he takes his gun back kind of aggressively and then abruptly kisses her. And it is this, like, obvious closed mouth kiss. There is no hint of any attraction before this. No lingering glances, no touches that kind of went on longer than they thought they would. Nothing. Like, they're just getting along because they know they have to survive.
What they call
So it's
a
completely
German
out.
kiss, where they kiss with clenched teeth.
Yeah. And it is
Yeah.
compl so it's completely out of nowhere, completely uncomfortable. It felt like watching a sexual assault. And then the only other references to this obnoxiously crowbarred in romantic subplot are a little bit after that, when they first, go to trap the dinosaur after they've rescued the teenage nephews, and the nephews are with them. She doesn't even like leave them in the relatively safe, park control room that they keep cutting back to. She takes them with them. She, her, and the nephew should have been in there. She takes them with her when they go to trap the dinosaur. And one of the kids says, "Your boyfriend's is a badass." She just kind of smiles and blushes. And I forget the context, but at the end he says, "I guess we have to stay together." That is the full extent of the romantic subplot.
And you don't like a romantic subplot
I rarely do. They have to be good. In the first place. I mean, my novel, there's a big romance at the core of it. And they can be done well. I don't like when they're crowbarred in.
And often they are.
And this was obnoxiously crowbarred. Aside from that, I would almost recommend the movie if you know what you're going in for. It's fun. But that part just ruined it.
I mean, I would say there are many moments I've been angry in movie theaters. Mm-hmm. I would say the original Jurassic Park is definitely in my top three.
I don't mind the original. I mean, it's been a long time since I've seen it, but it was idiotic, but it was okay. The effects were good. You know, if you go in just looking for cool effects, it's fine.
Well, right. That's what everybody goes on about, the effects. You know, oh, can you believe they did that? But it was just the movie itself. It's idiotic. Horrendous.
Yeah.
I mean, they actually advertised Jurassic Park merchandise in the damn movie. So it's I mean... And there were just so many unrealistic things about it, too. So what's the point of having the effects of creating a dinosaur if you're suspending the laws of physics and actually not having a dinosaur?
Right. Actual raptors were about the size of a turkey. But, yeah, actually there was one amusing moment in Jurassic World. One of the techs in the control room was wearing a Jurassic Park t-shirt.
Yeah.
They kind of called it out. It was amusing. Anyway.
Mel Brooks yelling, merchandising.
Yeah.
I've watched some movies also during our breaks. One of them was Knives Out, which if you like the murder mystery thing, that's a brilliant one. Mm. And what's his name? James Bond. As you can tell, we did not plan to talk about this stuff.
No.
James Bond was really good in that. It kind of like doing a Michael Scott Southern Gentleman. There's Which been a Bond? Murder here current kind of thing.
Daniel the current Craig. One. Bond
Daniel or... Craig. Yeah, okay. That's it. And the other movie I've seen, and that's kind of closer to our wheelhouse, The Lighthouse.
Oh, I read the plot summary and was thoroughly disturbed, so I don't know if I want to review that.
You know what? Let's not do it while we're quarantined still. It was a really dumb movie for me to watch in the current situation that we're in, because we are pretty much in the lighthouse right now. At least I am.
And without any further ado, on to this week's movie, which is from 2018, What We Left Behind, looking back at Star Wars Deep Space Nine, concluding our
Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Did I say Star Wars?
Yes, you did.
I apologize. Star Trek Deep Space Nine, concluding our July documentary two-parter. I actually thought of another documentary we need to review, but it's already left my brain. I'll have to think of it later.
Was it a Star Wars one?
No. That was a weird Freudian thing, which is weird because...
I was going to say, there was that one about the Elstree Studios that was pretty cool.
It wasn't Star Wars related. Anyway, but that, of course, that brings us to the impromptu pot story, sponsored by Garrick's Clothiers, where you can get a fine custom suit tailored while you wait, and while you're waiting, feel free to talk about all of the classified Federation secrets that you want. We certainly won't be listening.
And also brought to you by Love Interests. Anyone can be one. Except Mark Alamo.
Oh, poor guy.
All right, so we have the heir apparent to Star Trek The Next Generation. Everyone's going to love it. They're going to do something different with it, though. But everyone's just going to love it because it's Star Trek. And Star Trek fans just love anything that's put out right away in the franchise.
Yeah.
I'm kidding, of course. They hate it.
What this documentary really hit home for me, every Trek is new Trek.
Well, exactly. All of those letters, and this documentary does spend an awfully long time reading hate mail, which is hilarious. Every cast member reads at least one piece of hate mail throughout this documentary.
Every major cast member.
Even, like, minor ones, like Nog and, like...
Well, Nog got kind of big. I mean, like, minor... True. Like Keiko, not Keiko, Molly. She had like one line toward the end.
Right. But anyway, they, so all of those letters, you could easily have said they're the same things that they're talking about Discovery.
Yeah,
they're talking the
Picard,
same things
yeah.
they're talking about Picard.
And then the Abrams movies and Voyager and Enterprise and yeah.
I feel the Abrams movies kind of get a different kind of criticism because they're very, you know, action mainstream kind of thing.
Wait, but they say that's not Trek because
that's true.
People said, you know, TNG wasn't Trek because it was intellectual and calm and slow, and it wasn't the action fest that TOS was. And that became the blueprint for Trek. So now when it's not intellectual, and now when you have something that's really actiony that goes back to the originals, people say it's not Trek.
That's true. So, right, they really go over how much people hated this series. But really, it was just ahead of its time in the end.
In a lot of ways.
They talk about, I mean, they're definitely not the first to do a serialized a TV show, because that was one of the things. However, they were syndicated and did a serialized television show, which was really dangerous because they existed in multiple time slots. You never knew when it was on and when it wasn't. But towards the end, it was pretty regularly scheduled. But anyway, so they have that. They also daringly cast a black man as the captain, which
commander, to be pedantic. But, well, he does become captain eventually, though.
Yeah, they make him a captain again.
At the start, he's a commander. Season.
Yeah, at the start, he's down to a commander.
Which really is just the difference between a station and a ship. It's technically a lower rank, but not really in this case.
So, of course, there's people angry about that, and there's too many women, and, you know, so it's all the same things. People get mad about stuff to this very day. It's really sad how little we've moved on.
Yeah.
In over 30 years now is what this documentary really shows more than anything else. We are still in the same exact spot.
Yeah.
I said that we are in the same exact spot that we were back in 93.
Yeah.
And but then let it roll off them, of course. They could capitulate, and it's a lot of the same debate that we saw in last week's documentary of whether they're going to try to win the crowd over or whether they're going to go for what they want to go for. And really, they actually run down a checklist that they of things they successfully went for, and one they kind of they came
that
close
so
but
much. They're talking about all of these social issues that they were ahead of the curve on, and they get to LGBTQ plus representation, and yeah, there was a little bit, but then Ira Stephen Bear, the showrunner, calls out his own show saying we didn't do enough.
Yeah.
Fucking
and
love
I don't
that.
Know. And really, he wouldn't have gotten away with more than he did.
No.
I mean, the way what he got away with was pretty cool as it was, but and yeah, he didn't even try is what he kicked himself for.
Right.
He never asked.
Right.
And I don't know. It would have been very disruptive, I think, if Garrick
Came out, yeah. I had no idea Garrick was gay. I'd never put that together.
I hadn't either until I saw this. Yeah, that was like a what? Of course, yeah.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense in hindsight.
I mean, really, the homoerotic thing was more Miles and Bashir than it was Garrick.
Right.
Garrick was more unrequited, of course, but, you know, Miles and Bashir, it was always kind of like, dude, just get a room. And then they literally do get... You know, rent hollow suites and play around together in there, but you know, nothing actually happens. But yeah, I didn't realize the sexual tension. And once you see it, you can't unsee it. You're like, holy shit! Yeah, he is just like.
And I already loved Garrick. That just helps. It just adds to it for me.
So where was I? So they let it roll off them the criticism, and they pretty much go for what they want to go for, and. Really, some of the cast you could tell just absolute family, like all the Ferengi,
Right.
having this tradition of inviting people over to the house on Saturday before or Sunday before before they shoot to like have dinner together
And
and
when
just
there's
like
an
really.
episode with multiple Ferengi in it.
So and yeah, just the cast that they had on deck too, and of course, need I say more than Jeffrey Combs?
Jeffrey Combs plays a Vorta. I'm only just starting season three. I cannot wait to get to that. I cannot wait to fucking hate him.
Oh, he's so hateable in this.
Because I already hate
He's
Vorta. I understand the Vorta already because of Clear Skies, the Star Trek RPG I watch. I saw that Combs plays a Vorta. I can't fucking wait.
Yeah, he is. He's quite punchable, and you can't wait for him to.
And apparently he dies multiple times, which is
Yes,
beautiful.
yes. And they need to bring him into like the newer Trek
Oh, they
series.
will be, I'm sure.
Like I saw someone online suggest he should be the doctor in Strange New Worlds.
Oh, that'd be nice, yeah.
Like he'd be perfect to play that older doctor, that the original Bones, really.
Right.
but anyway, so we pretty much have a Star Trek crew and very eccentric personalities, and I mean, there's some pretty heavy moments too, of course, where the talk about from the vets who
Love that.
watched the episode with is
With
he wanted to
Nog.
call him Nog Heisenberg, who like passed. I'm trying to remember when it
He
was
was
he
last
did.
year.
Yeah, it was 19. I think it was shortly after we saw this in the theater.
Okay.
Like I think we saw it in the summer, and then I
Maybe it
think
was
he
late
passed
18.
right after it.
Yeah, this is kind of a half-assed René Auberjonois tribute because we couldn't find anything else that he fed us that he'd done.
Right, he really wasn't a movie actor, and yeah, so it just the inner workings of this TV series that's very honest.
I love that. They left in all the disagreements, and they had a really clever device where they were talking about an imagined season 8. The writers were breaking
Yeah.
season 8, or the first episode of it.
So you got to see how a writer's room would work in a sci-fi show. So it was just, I mean, there's
And I
just so
wish I
many
could see
wonderful
that opening
things.
episode of season 8 now.
Of course. I loved Eisenberg's walk off after they found out they were going to kill him.
Hilarity ensues.
Hilarity ensues.
And I have to admit, I was going to say this before. In recent years, I've actually become more of a Star Trek fan than a Star Wars fan. Because, I mean, I loved Star Wars as a kid, kind of lost interest in it after Jedi, got more into Star Wars between like 85 and 95, or Trek rather, between 85 and 95. Then in the mid 90s, I got back into Star Wars kind of hardcore. Recent years, thanks to the two RPGs I've watched, Clear Skies and Shield of Tomorrow, and a bit Blood of the Void, that they're doing a Klingon one now, and the new series and the movies, I've really kind of fallen in love with Trek. Say again?
I mean, I saw it when I was like four. So
So say that again. You're
I
cutting out a
started as a
bit.
Star Wars fan. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I
Say
hope
that.
I don't.
Say that again.
Okay. I was always a Star Wars fan. Well, I started as a Star Wars fan because I saw the movie when I was like 4 years old, and the show always seemed boring to me when I was little, but in teenage years, I didn't leave Star Wars behind, but could easily see how Star Trek and Doctor Who, pretty much at the same time, were just awesome
Yeah, I didn't get into Who until
things to
New
escape to.
Who. But yeah,
Oh no.
I loved TOS before TNG aired. So I was one of the people who hated TNG when it started because it was different. But I do have a
It
question.
was cool to, it was cool because it was just like, oh my God, we've got new Star Trek. Because I mean, there were so many dated hippy dippy Star Trek episodes that you're kind of like, oh, okay, where they're screaming Herbert at him and stuff. That one.
I do have a question, though, and but though this was kind of addressed in the documentary. Did Bashir remain an insufferable douchebag for the entire series, or did he become more tolerable at some point, preferably after getting the shit beaten out of him like 5 or 6 times on camera?
I think he became more tolerable.
They kind of suggest that, yeah. I fucking hate him. I'm like I said, just starting season 3, I still fucking hate him.
Yeah, I think he you know, warms up, you know, he matures as the story goes on, as they explain. Did they get to the plot yet where about his makeup or his abilities?
No. War just started.
Okay.
I actually was gonna message you that question like 3 or 4 weeks ago when I was watching season 1. But I realized we're reviewing the documentary soon, so I'll hold on to it.
Well, that was the fun of this cast, was that not everyone got along.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, you know, because he's the, you know, the doctor who's looking for adventure and you know, wants to go out to this space station to, like, you know, get into the action, right, not knowing what the action is.
Yeah. Now, the movie opens up with the actor who played Rom doing this lounge song about DS9.
Now,
I'm so glad I'd seen him out of makeup and knew who it was.
One thing I've hated about Deep Space Nine is the lounge lizard stuff.
I haven't gotten to that yet. I'm not looking forward to it.
Why?
But that opening was just painful. I have "make it stop" as one of my notes. And then we hear a voiceover from, I think it's Mark Robinson, Garrick. I recognized his voice before I recognized him out of makeup.
Now, the lounge lizard stuff was annoying, with the exception of Jeffrey Combs.
Yeah. Well, I liked the ending. The lounge lizard thing,
oh, that's
at the
right.
End, I dug.
Combs didn't come until the end. That's right. Yeah. That's right.
That I enjoyed, but the beginning one was just painful. Like I said, I love them reading the negative reviews. Ira Stephen Bear's blue goatee kind of makes me wonder if I'm missing an opportunity. Because I started losing my hair in my early 20s. And, you know, so, but I've had a beard off and on here and there. I never thought about dyeing my beard. Kind of always wished I would have dyed my hair, but, you know, receding dyed hair just looks tragic. Speaking of how the cast and crew look now, Nana Visitor has aged incredibly well.
Yes.
I was shocked. Aside from her hair going gray, she barely looks older.
I'd say all of the women have aged well, actually.
But particularly her, though. It just got me off guard. And they talk about how DS9 isn't thought of as well as, you know, TOS or TNG. But Voyager was really the one that got the shit.
I've not even made it through Voyager, honestly. It's the only Star Trek I've not.
And Voyager was the one I loved. I watched religiously. So I remember all the shit that one got. I mean, until Discovery. Obviously, Discovery got piled on more than Voyager did, because it was very action-heavy.
Now, I mean, for Deep Space Nine, they kind of lost me somewhere in the first or second season.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wound up picking it back up, maybe, I think, in the third.
See,
I think,
I've watched... most of the first 2 seasons, bailed for some reason. I don't remember why. I think that's when I got into Star Wars and kind of thought I had to. But you were talking about on Messenger about how this was going to spoil so much for me. It really didn't spoil much, because a lot of it I already knew. I already knew about Worf. I already knew about Ezri. There were a few other things. But there were only a few things that it kind of spoiled for me, and none of it I really cared about. Like, Odo and Kira getting together. I didn't know that was going to happen.
Yeah.
I didn't know that apparently Sisko is going to ascend at the end.
Yes.
I didn't know about that.
Which, I mean, if you think about it, they set that up in the pilot.
Oh, yeah. It's like set up for real.
They totally... not like added, like, what? This is weird out of nowhere. They pretty much tell you that's what's going to happen in the pilot. But, of course, you kind of forget about that.
Right.
until the end, you're like, oh, wait a minute.
But I think the real problem for DS9 is that it premiered a year before Babylon 5. And that they were compared a lot.
Yeah.
Because they're both set on space stations.
And yeah, Babylon 5 was just beloved.
Yeah. Even
I never
though
really got into it.
Babylon 5, I love Babylon 5 from the second season on. The first season is a slog. Like, you have to get through it to understand some stuff, but it is painful. From season two on, it's a masterpiece.
You'd say it's more of a slog than season one of DS9?
Oh, absolutely. I didn't mind season one of DS9.
Oh
I mean,
wow,
it
so
wasn't great, but it was fine. It's probably the best first season of a lot of Star Trek. And I also didn't think about it. I don't think about it being particularly dark now, but when they were explaining that it's probably the darkest Star Trek series, it really is.
Oh yeah.
Because it's
Well
not
yeah,
about the
because
hope.
Before this, it was all about a utopian,
Right.
somewhere someone said, you really can't have a drama set in a utopia.
Right. Something they
Just
didn't
don't work
realize
that
again
way.
until Picard.
Yeah.
And
Well, that
people. Go ahead.
series wasn't really a utopia, so there
No.
wasn't really a drama, so action can work in a utopia.
Right.
Yeah, we do all this and get away with it.
Right. And people complain about, the Federation being compromised in Picard. DS9 played with that too.
Oh yeah. In fact, this is where that Section 31
Right.
w came up.
Was Section 31 invented for in DS9?
Yeah.
Okay. Surprised it took them that long to realize that the Federation would have a shady intelligence aspect.
Right. So when they bring this back in Discovery, it's kind of like, oh, this is cool because the episodes with Bashir being recruited and stuff were just really good.
Nice. Now, one thing that kind of bugged me were the ads. I watched this on Amazon. I don't see ads much anymore. So seeing ads suddenly crowbarred into the middle of this movie kind of got on my nerves.
Mine didn't have ads.
You watch it on Amazon?
Yeah.
You must have a much better ad blocker than I do. We'll have to discuss that later. It was nice to see how Kira and Dax influenced a lot of women.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hadn't
Oh
really
yeah,
thought about that.
totally.
And just how revolutionary representation of women was on the show, because you don't think about that 25 years later.
Did we know someone that named their kid Jadzia?
Yes, we did. Hadn't thought about any ages.
Neither.
Loved the disagreement about Quark and Rom's heads being switched. Like, Ira Steven Barry remembered it one way, and Armin Shimerman and Rom, like, I don't know the actor's name offhand, I apologize, did not remember this happening. And they
And
left
you doubt
a.
that it really happened.
Yeah. And they left a lot of that stuff in where they, like, disagreed over stories, and you'd hear someone listening to a story and just rolling their eyes. Love that they left all that in. Love the story of Rene Aubergenois tearing his makeup off at the end of the season six and handing it to Ira Steven Bear.
And he goes and frames it.
Yeah, and he
They
has it
show
framed in his home to
it.
this
They
day.
show it sitting in his living room.
Like, I'm done with this shit. Goodbye. Here's the pain you've caused me over the years. I was a bit shocked that Mark Olaimo felt underappreciated because Dukat was iconic on that show.
Right, and he had to have been good because he was a pain in the ass, obviously.
Yeah.
He had to have been good for them to want to put up with him to bring him back.
And just the character. I mean, maybe it's watching it now that he seems so iconic. Maybe he wasn't seen as so iconic in the time, but they kind of suggest he was because he was a lot more popular than Garak.
Right, they said that was shocking to me when they said that he was the popular Cardassian and not Garak. It was kind of like, not Garak. Who doesn't like Garak?
Yeah. Also surprised that opening season two with a three-parter was so revolutionary, but I forget how episodic everything was back then.
Right, because I thought I remember Next Generation having unofficial three-parters, episodes that kind of went together. Like I think there was one with like the Klingon Civil War and stuff where they just, and that came before this.
But I think serialized TV didn't really become a thing until the late 90s.
Well, Bochco was doing it
Yeah.
for a long time in
True.
different degrees. And I know like the show Wise Guy would do like a whole season story, and I think, yeah, Crime Story also, Michael Mann was doing that.
But those were all cop shows. In the genre, as it's called, you had a lot of Monster of the Week. That's where the term Monster of the Week comes from.
Well, the big difference isn't that they were cop shows, it's that they were network shows and they
Oh.
had a nice steady time slot. Advertised, you knew where it was and knew how to see it. We're Deep Space Nine. I think we got back into it because it was something that was on when we got home from wherever, on like a Sunday night. That was kind of the official end of the week, was like, oh yeah, DS9's on,
I remember when Buffy went serialized in season two, because season one was pure Monster of the Week. There was a lot of controversy about it because it was such a change, and people weren't ready for a serialized show in the genre. Serialized horror instead of this simplistic Monster of the Week thing. And watching season one and two, I'm realizing just how over episodic TV I am. I mean, it feels episodic, too episodic to me now. I didn't realize how even serialized it was for its time.
Yeah, so for a syndicated show, yeah, that was a big deal.
Yeah, and it was kind of sad to hear how against serialization the network was. Oh, incidentally, the apostrophe in Kronos is after the first O. And it's pronounced Kronos in English because it's transliterated. It's spelled
Okay.
QO apostrophe NOS.
Yeah.
And even after 40 minutes, Sisko's ascension was the only spoiler. 40 minutes of the documentary, I mean. I love that they approached it as plot was secondary to character.
Yeah.
Explains why enjoying it so much. Oh, and yeah, like I said, Odo Akira was a spoiler. Didn't realize its take on terrorism was so far ahead of its time.
Oh, yeah.
He cut out again.
Well, they just were exploring, when you're a soldier and you're just doing what you have to do or whatever, or following orders, what the repercussions are for that.
I am not looking forward to, I'm just going through my notes. I'm not looking forward to the musical stuff. I mean, I appreciate that they went there, but eh.
It's yeah, and I think they, I don't know, I was annoyed by him.
Now, Bumumi was in this documentary, Will Robinson, the original Will Robinson.
Oh yeah.
Because apparently he was a guest star on DS9. He was also a regular on Babylon 5.
Really?
He was like one of the Minbari. But that I enjoyed because, like I said, those two shows were compared a lot because they were both on space stations, both airing at the same time. Love that Combs got mentioned three times in the list of recurring players. They get to Jeffrey Combs and they say his name like three times. Apparently there was a connection issue.
You there?
Yeah, he there
Yeah,
was a
oh, yeah,
connection
okay.
problem.
You went.
Hello.
Okay. Yeah, I think the last thing you said was Jeffrey Combs.
I love how they got men how he got mentioned like three times in the list of recurring players. They like said repeated his name three times. That would explain why you've been cutting out here and there. Okay, I'm just leaving this all in, so because now we have an explanation. The stunt coordinator, I loved. He looked like a reject from a hair metal band.
Yes, I thought, like, wait, do they have somebody from Journey on this?
He even had a bandana around his calf. I never understood that. I lived through the 80s. I was a hair metal fan. I never understood the bandana around the leg.
It was cool, the just the variety of people they had at least give something in this, you know.
Yeah. And I love how in depth they went out about on about Terry Farrell's decision to leave.
Well, yeah, that was that's the elephant in the room, of course. And I think you can piece together just from what was said and unsaid here, you know, that she gave a pretty detailed account of what happened, and the stu and the producers, of course, were very like, I don't know. So it's kind of like, wait a minute.
It was, you're taking this amount of money or goodbye, and she said
Give a dear,
goodbye.
like what he said, it was something like, we can't say anything different than the lower producers said by the time you get to me, which is kind of like, what? What's that mean? Just, I don't know what to do about it. They want to save some money is really what it came down to.
I loved the wormhole cosplay that they showed briefly too. The dress that turned into the wormhole, loved that. And I realized with only 17 minutes left to the show, the movie, that the whole planned season 8 spiel was just a way to show how they break seasons or break
Yeah.
episodes. I thought they were actually talking about some kind of fantasy season that I would have loved to see. I was a little disappointed too, when I finally realized that's why they were talking about it.
It was just bringing the room together, and it's like, this is how we would have, and yeah, just throwing things out there and then kind of seeing how they become that thing, you know?
Which was
Like,
fascinating in hindsight, to get a little insight into
I was driving here and I thought we're gonna kill Miles, but
that.
then it's gotta be Nog.
Also, during the little retrospective thing at the end, they mentioned John Colicos, the original Balthar from the original Battlestar Galactica. I did not know he was on DS9.
Yeah, I wonder what episode.
I'm looking forward to seeing him. I also didn't know Iggy Pop played Evorta. That's something I'm really looking forward to.
Star Trek's always had a rich history of just, you know, who knows what guest star they could cram in there, you know, in weird outfits and stuff.
But
They're
Iggy
from Mick
Pop and Jeffrey
Fleetwood,
Combs as Vorta. I may have to reassess my opinion of Vorta now.
Iggy Pop.
I'm just really glad I watched the closing credits because there was so much to it. We had that
Right.
little lounge singer gag, and then you skim forward a little bit and Stephen Bear shows up, Irish Stephen Bear shows up and just starts going on a spiel. Nana Visitor show comes in and they go on, I love that they mention Trials and Tribulations.
Oh, that is one of the best episodes in any franchise, I think.
I am a little annoyed that they didn't say much about Morn, because I adore Morn. Does he ever have a line?
No.
No, I was hoping not.
Never. I don't remember. I don't think he did. No.
That's brilliant that he never had a word, but he's such a fixture. And the actor gave him so much personality without saying a fucking word.
Sort of George Wendt.
Yeah, effectively, he is the norm of quarks, you're right.
Right, he's just Norm backwards.
Yeah. Oh shit. I didn't connect that. You're right.
Yeah, that's really what they did. They just wanted a nice little Cheers reference
Oh wow,
in
nice.
Quarks. So
And
yeah, it would have been nice if they had done that. Really, what I think the shocking thing they did not mention in this was that Kira and Bashir married in real life for like a season or two.
Yeah, I already knew that. So it didn't catch me off guard when they briefly mentioned it, yeah.
Right. So it's kind of like, though, I mean, I guess they just didn't want to dig up like whatever happened there, but I mean, that's pretty fucked up for a show if you think about it. I mean, people hook up on shows all the time, I'm sure,
Well,
but
and
how
when
often
you're
do you get
working what they
married?
said, like 16 hours a day with each other, things are gonna happen.
How often do they get married? Like, I think they got married between seasons one and two, and I don't know
Had
when
a
they got,
kid.
yeah, had a kid, and I think they got divorced like before the show was even done.
Not surprising. And like I said, the greatest moment in DS9 history. Because I've watched that episode fairly recently. It's a season one episode.
And you're just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, that was cringy in the episode, and then they reference it there, and oh God, I almost fell out of my chair.
As the greatest moment in
Yeah.
DS9 history.
onto Brains, because there's no sequels and remakes here. I mean, unless they do that fictional of season eight.
I just looked it up. They got married in 97 and were divorced in 01, so I guess that
Okay.
was after the series had finished.
Under Brains.
On to Brains.
This is a five.
Yeah. It just, if you want to look about writing or sci-fi or creating a TV show in general, this is just a much see, let alone a Star Trek series.
And I just love how warts and all it was, leaving in the disagreements about what things had happened and all of the controversies, like with Terry Farrell and everything. And they
Yeah.
were just so open about it. And the whole bit about season eight was brilliant. And just the weirdness of the musical numbers, which now I know fits the show, it's
Yeah.
just brilliant.
The other thing that I forgot was them being resentful about bringing Worf in. And of course, they're quick to say not Michael Dorn, because I mean, how could you not love Michael Dorn? He seems like an awesome guy to hang out with. But just the fact that, they didn't have faith in them on their own, like,
Their
why do we
bigger
need to bring
brother
them?
had to come in and save them.
Yeah, but it does make the show so much better. It was.
So what have we learned?
We learned that life's too short to make things just for executives.
And now I'm in that I really need to binge watch the rest of the series.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
just starting season two, three. The war just started. I need to binge the rest of it because I had no idea it got that weird. Because you were worried about it spoiling it for me. It really just made me want to push through the series.
And I think also you see how crazy cool Sisko
Oh, yeah. Well, I knew
is
about
in
that.
this.
I remembered him
Yeah.
from Hawk. Hell, I remember
Yeah.
him from Spencer for Hire.
Well, that was Spencer for Hire,
No,
Hawk.
Hawk was its own show. That was a
Oh, I
spin-off of
see.
Spencer for Hire.
Okay.
So,
I forgot that they spun did a spin-off for him.
I understood all the Captain Hawk stuff when it was happening. But yeah, I remember when he shaved his head. I think I said earlier, I was must have been checking on the show periodically because I remember the head shaving and the goatee. And Worf and him getting together with Jadzia and Ezri and all of that. I'm glad I knew about Ezri, because I would have been upset if this was the first time I was finding out about that.
Yeah, because that was quite a gut punch, that episode. I think we knew she was leaving, I think. I forget now.
Anyway, that's it for What We Left Behind. Until next time, we'll be doing an anime double feature with Pale Cocoon and Padma Inverted, both by director Yasuhiro Yoshiura. We have, it's that time of year again. We always do anime in the spring and summer. So I'm getting into a double feature here. Pale Cocoon's only 20 minutes, so it's not like we're doing two full movies. Until then, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life. There you are.
There you are.